Hello, Blenders. On this week's show, Gabe and I are back from San Diego Comic-Con. We're finally going to talk about Deadpool and Wolverine, and M. Night Shyamalan joins the show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 316 of Real Blend, a podcast that will be doing this till we're 90.
90.
Till you're 90.
So for Sean's got like a solid 10 more years.
If that.
That's so rude. That's so rude.
What an asshole. On this week's show, Gabe and I are back from a massive San Diego Comic-Con. We are finally going to talk Deadpool and Wolverine spoilers. We have been hearing from everybody on social media and in the comment section. You guys are waiting to hear our take on the new Marvel Studios movie. And the guest this week, guys, friend of the show, returning guest, director M. Night Shyamalan, is coming back to Real Blend to discuss his new film, Trap. So we got a full show. We got a jam-packed show, and we're joined this week by Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago. Hello, Jakey. How are you?
I'm doing well. Can we tease that M. Night Shyamalan revealed to us an ending to The Village that I never knew existed? But I don't know if you caught that moment in the interview when we were all there, because we were all in the room together. Right. There's a moment where he pauses where it feels like I was in my interpretation of his body language. It was him going, do I want to tell these guys this thing?
Yeah.
And it was a really interesting, it's the very last question of the interview. And there's definitely a moment on his part where he's really questioning whether or not he wants to tell us this other alternate ending. Because, yeah. I mean, The Village came out at a time where I used to devour DVD special features. And when he started telling us about that, I remember thinking, I don't remember that on the DVD special features. And it's not.
No, and like none of it sounded familiar at all, even. Because what do you remember the song he was listening to?
99 Problems.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay, well, let's not give it away. It's going to be part of the interview, so you guys will enjoy this one. But definitely, now that you know that, pay attention to his body language when he starts answering that question. Because I think I did get a read of that as well.
Is the bit that it's 99 Problems, but a fictional creature ain't one?
That's Gabe Kovach.
Is that how that went? I guess we'll have to listen and find out.
Gabe is sitting in the chair as well this week. Hello, Gabe. How are you doing?
I'm good. I do have a question for you, Sean.
Sure.
M. Night Shyamalan likes to make original movies. I don't think he's going to stop doing that.
Probably not.
Because he's made a name for himself, and he's made a lot of money doing it. But what kind of MCU movie would he make if we got him in a superhero kind of role, or a blockbuster-y type of role?
I would give him a Doctor Strange movie in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Because I think that he could do a twist on like a supernatural spin, or I think he's really good at ratcheting up tension.
What if he did a movie, but the twist was at the end, you find out it's in a Marvel movie?
Pretty good.
I was going to say, what if he did a character's like a Spider-Man or something, and then you find out at the end that actually it's the moment they realize that they were dusted the whole time?
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. I like this. I don't know. You're right in the fact that like M. Night's one of our last, not last, but like, he's still churning out original ideas.
And he did his superhero comic book thing in his own way, which is awesome.
Yeah, sure, really.
I mean, helped
kick off that entire genre.
Exactly.
And then when he did try to go over to IP with Avatar, it didn't really.
Oh, you know what? I kind of forgot about
Last Airbender. Yeah. Didn't really fly that way. So,
that's a tough one to make.
We'll talk about Trap in a little bit. And we're also going to talk about, M. Night's career in general by throwing it to him. Let me get to the housekeeping really, really fast. Hi, if you're watching us on YouTube, thank you very much for joining us. Do us a favor. Hit like and subscribe. We are rapidly adding subscribers. Things like Zack Snyder really help. It's good to have Zack back on the show. Talking about his Rebel Moon director's cuts. Those are available on Netflix.
Two interviews as we this
speak.
Week.
Yeah.
Zack
and M. Night. Of course, we're available all the different places you get your audio podcast needs met. And we have Real Blend Premium as well, too, which gets you an ad-free version of the show and a newsletter. Check the description for information on how you can sign up for Real Blend Premium. Quick tease. Go to the YouTube channel or any of our archives. That's where you will find Zack Snyder, who came on the show earlier this week for a quote-unquote bonus episode, but a nice long 30-minute interview with Zack, talking about his favorite director's cuts and plans to go back in and touch up Sucker Punch, and this really interesting conversation about how streamers allegedly are concerned about ratings and runtimes. I thought that was, I learned a lot from that, that, you know, some of the behind the scenes about his negotiations to get his final cuts of Rebel Moon put together. So I don't know. Zack's an interesting guy, especially when you talk about his final cuts of his movies. And it seems like almost all of them, almost all the really interesting ones, Watchmen, 300, BVS, obviously Justice League.
Can I ask you a quick question before we toss it to Knight? Does it, look at that book. Does it make you guys apprehensive to even bother watching the new Zack Snyder movie in the first place? If in actuality, you know, deep down, we're just going to get the director's cut in 6 months to a year.
I mean, I can confess something to you completely. I have not watched Rebel Moon because I knew we were getting director's cuts. And I said, I'm not going to watch 12 hours of this. Like, I'd rather just watch his movies. Like, I'd rather watch his cuts. Like, I just made that decision.
I listen to the interview. I don't know how I feel about his answer to that question that we asked about why is there even a director's cut for a movie that goes to streaming.
I don't think he had a definitive answer. I feel like he still feels like he's not quite sure why they were alternate cuts.
I get the sense that he's known for director's cuts, so he probably comes to the table in his deal with a sense of like there will be more cuts, and like the Justice League cut is its own wild different thing than a Zack Snyder director's cut. And I imagine that some executives or whatever, Netflix's stance on it is, okay, well, if we can get something that is for a wider audience and a more approachable runtime, then that is worth it. And we can give him one and we get four movies for the price of two, in a sense. Like, I don't know if that's the exact math they were doing, but I think at that point he goes, I get to make the movie I want. I can deliver the movie you want. Yeah. And he's not that concerned about it.
It's less his decision. Yeah, I guess I just don't understand Netflix. Like for a streaming service that famously won't go week to week with their episodic TV, that instead would rather us sit there and binge 8 hours at a time. But it's, you don't trust us to watch a 3 hour movie? You don't trust us to watch three episodes in a row?
I think it's such a whiff, though, because Star Wars, especially, you know, 6 months ago, very much struggling. And that's been struggling for in the minds of fans, of like feeling a bit fatigued or a bit kind of bored with some of their storylines. And you being able to say, like, we have R-rated Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, just market R-rated Star Wars movies.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Instead of like, well, there's this one, but there'll be more later, and it's still PG. Like, I didn't understand it from the get-go.
I mean, to your point, my parents, I didn't know that they were doing this, but they called me and they said, yeah, we watched that Rebel Moon. It was all right. Oh. And so I said, well, you know, guys, I was like, I really wish you hadn't watched that, because like a cooler, longer, bloodier cut is coming out in like 6 months. And they go, well, hell, why not? Well, we already saw it. Why would we watch it again? Like, they won't do that. I can't talk about the diehards.
Yeah.
I'll say this, too. As somebody who did watch the two theatrical cuts, when I sat down to watch the director's cuts, I spent most of my time asking, like, was this in the theatrical cut? Is this new?
See, I didn't want to do that. Yeah. I did not.
Yeah. It's super distracting.
Professionally, I can't make that decision very often, but that was one of those, you know, few releases a year where I was like, I'm going to try to experience this the way that I want to and not have to get bogged down in covering it. So I'm excited to go in fresh. I didn't get screeners or anything for it, so I plan on watching that over the next, you know, this weekend or next.
Well, I think the director's cuts are better. I honestly do. I think the story breathes in a better way.
Yeah. Will you watch the director's cut of Napoleon?
Yeah, sure, I will.
I think I honestly, I'm more intrigued by the director's cut of Napoleon than I am the director's cut of.
Is that available?
I don't think so. I think it recently went through the MPAA system. That's I think they had to resubmit it. So which means it exists, which means they're
just
going to
drop it.
Yeah, on Apple TV, I think. Yeah,
they're just going to drop it. Put it out there.
I don't think so. But I mean, if you anyone who is familiar with the difference between the theatrical and director's cut of Kingdom of Heaven.
Yeah.
I mean, I would honestly say I would make a really solid argument that the director's cut of Kingdom of Heaven could make a like top five Ridley Scott ranking.
Yeah,
I need to rewatch
that. That's how good it is.
Yeah. But this is going to sound bad, but I don't remember Napoleon enough. Maybe as I sit down to watch.
Wiped, and this is going to sound like woe is me, and don't come after us in the comments. But like we had all just gotten into Paris. We were exhausted. Like we had all just gotten off like 14 hour flights and then had to go sit down in a dark movie theater for 3 hours and watch. Yeah. You know, it was, look, I get it. Yeah. Well, boohoo. But like it is a bad experience to watch a movie in.
To relate and make it sound less glamorous. The summer that Fury Road came out. Mm-hmm. I was still in college and I had like a study abroad thing over the summer in London. And for some reason, it's like hard to watch movies in London. Like you're just getting tickets. Everything was packed. It was busy. So I waited till I got home to watch Fury Road. But I literally, same thing, jet lagged, got off the plane, went. And Fury Road, I fell asleep in. I had to go back and watch it. Fury Road, bad a flight can affect your experiences. Is there was just desert explosions and I was like, I had my body needs rest. Yeah.
No, I get that. I mean, Gabe, they drove in one direction. They turned around and they drove back.
Oh, I don't have Kevin here to
turn around and they drove back.
And I'm too tired to defend.
No, I understand.
There's a lot of interesting things that happened in between that drive. There was a guy playing guitar on one of those cars that was driving.
You mentioned Apple TV and it brought to mind. Did you finish Presumed Innocence?
Oh, good God. Yes, of course I did.
I thought the finale sucked.
What? No.
I was really disappointed in the
finale.
We
must discuss off air. If you have not watched Presumed Innocent, I think you can make a really solid argument that and The Bear
Don't put that on the same level as The Bear. Stop it.
No, it's not on the same level as The Bear, but they're among the best things on TV.
What's the other one? What are you going to recommend?
Well, I was trying to figure
out. Lost again.
always lost. I really love this season of House of the Dragon. I really
do. Oh, really? Good.
Yeah, I really like this season. I'm trying to avoid
you guys heard the finale leaked.
Oh it did? Geez, no.
Yeah, so I'm trying to stay off the internet for the next 5 days
No spoilers, and we should move on to, but this most recent episode, did it feel like an episode, like a penultimate episode in Game of Thrones? Usually those are like, big.
No, let me rephrase, because I know what you're talking about. Usually the penultimate episode is like,
feels like a finale.
Battle of the Bastards.
Better one,
or like,
right?
Yeah. I don't feel like that's what they're doing with this show. Story. Yeah. Because it wasn't the case last season either. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
In the sense of Game of Thrones, you're right. Usually, it's usually 10 episodes, and the ninth is like the big one.
The big one, and then the 10th is like settling and setting you up for the next one.
Yeah. Probably smart to get away from that formula.
I kind of loved it, though. I always looked forward to being like, oh, like surprised. Like, oh, wait, no, this is a big one. It's the second one.
Yeah. No, speaking of surprises, our next director is, look at that transition. Nice.
Look at that.
The master of surprise.
He is the master of surprise. Yes, he is. Surprised us at our screening by coming out and introducing.
Yeah, that's right.
Actually, this is really cool. We went to the Crosby Hotel in New York to watch this. They have a screening room down in the basement. And in addition to the screening room, they have a really nice bar and a big setup and everything. And we
see screening
room
in the basement. It sounds really terrifying for an M. Night movie.
Oh, gosh. No, it was beautiful. It's a beautiful screening room. It's really nice. And we walked in and were met by Knight's reps, who immediately grabbed Jake and I and said, come on over, come meet Knight. And Knight was hanging out at the bar and we got to socialize with him a bit. And he knew the show and was excited to come on the next day. And so that was really cool to touch base with him before this. And then we went and saw Trap and then got a chance to talk to M. Night Shyamalan about his new film. And you're going to listen to that right now. This is M. Night Shyamalan returning to the Real Blend podcast to discuss his new film, Trap. We always love getting a chance to sit down and talk with you, and this movie is so much fun. We had such a blast with it. A terrific ride. It literally felt, I'm so glad you said beforehand to think of it as like a 90s throwback. I assume that this movie should have Dimension, you know, as a logo right before it starts. So really great vibe to that. I'm the parent on the show. I have two boys. Mm-hmm. They're 20 and 16. And so going through this movie, I had a really weird sensation that multiple times throughout the film, I sympathized with Cooper as a dad who couldn't
appreciate the cool shit his daughter was getting to do, right? And then so I was like sympathizing with a character who's known as the Butcher. Is that okay? Like, did you think about that aspect at all while you were writing the character?
Oh, I mean, the fun part of it was, you know, the duality of these two things existing, that this guy, I'm trying to talk around some of it so we don't give away too much.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
But that in his life up until this day, he's able to be one or the other pretty effectively. And he seems he got it. He's got it together. And they can coexist. But on this day, he has to be both at the same time. To be, you know, the Butcher in that mind of being able to solve everything and get away with things, where and then still be this amazing dad, which he kind of on this day learns that he loves that. You know, he loves being the dad.
Yeah.
And so that's a kind of was the beauty with me and Josh talking about the movie, Josh Hartnett, you know, that this is his realization on this day is that, you know, I think these individuals, which is really interesting, they pretend. And then what if one part of them that was pretending is actually real? Is a kind of beautiful thing that, you know, are they on the continuum of humanity?
So I'm not deranged for...
No. In fact, that was what excited me about the movie when I thought of the idea. It was for somebody else. We were kind of thinking of the idea for someone else to do. For like, you know, for Salika, I was like, I'll think of an idea and then we'll get someone to direct it and write it and it'll be great. And then I was like, when I thought of the trap and all this, I was like, this is super cool. Like, a serial killer's trap.
Screw everybody else. I'm doing this.
No, that wasn't the moment. It was the moment when I went, well, how do we do this? Because I started to think about it. Okay, you're with the FBI. You're with the pop stars. They're making the plan. And then they go to the concert. And I was like, wait, this doesn't feel as exciting. And then when I went, ooh, what if you're with the antagonist? But I make it feel like the protagonist. Yeah. That's when I went, ooh, I want
to
do this.
And to your point, Sean, I'm not going to say when or why this happened. There's a hug that I think makes that what you're talking about significant. But go ahead, Jake.
Yeah. There's a trend of videos going around social media right now where it's basically like, look at this crazy ass extra in the background, like way overperforming whatever task they were given. And, you know, you can still look at someone who's clearly trying to get the focus and make sure they're on camera and they're like super overacting. The famous one is there's an older woman in the background, I think Dr. Strange, like a wedding scene where she's like really selling this moment. You are dealing with what I assume is more extras than you've ever dealt with at any given time. How do you make sure that there's not someone in the background almost overacting to the point of being distraction so that 10 years later someone can't point and go, look at that extra. What the hell are they doing back there?
Well, I mean, you're never going to be perfect on this front. This is not going to happen, you know.
Did you catch anyone in the edit when you're...
Yeah, you're never going to be perfect about that, you know, but there's... Because your actual actors may do something magical in the foreground, and then you just have to live with the guy that's in the background going, ah, you know, whatever it is. And so you just sacrifice that. But, you know, we're trying to get naturalistic, you know, performances if we can. And you try to give an overview to the extras about complexity. I mean, I give a little speech about trying to do duality. So I say, don't pick one thing. I mean, I do this on a much deeper level with the main actor.
Of course.
But with the extras, I just, you know, I try to give them a little bit of, you're always holding multiple things. So don't just pick one color and that's who you are. You know, so they kind of, for a second, you know, sometimes they're like, I'm quoting like Nietzsche or whatever. And they're just like this. And I'm like, see that look you're giving me? That's really complex. That's what I want to say. Like, don't do it. You don't quite have what I'm saying. Great. That's really real. But we try really hard. But in this movie, one of the critical things was we shot the movie in order for the extras. So they were actually watching the concert
in
order. And so they were really kind of dazzled by what we were showing them. Mm-hmm. And they got the music in advance. So they all knew the words to the music. So we go, on this day, we're doing this song. So they all knew the song. So they were really singing along. And then they loved the music. And then when Sleek was performing, they weren't acting. They were like, whoa. And what we did first is we shoot the audience side first, so we got genuine reactions to what they were watching, because they'd never seen it. And, you know, we did it like 7 or 8 times, and each time, you know, Salika and the dancers and the thing was still spectacular for them, and it's new little nuances, and Salika would do something, and they would, like, light up, and you'd see it for real. They weren't acting. Then we would do the performer's side on the stage, and by that time, they kind of had it down, and then we recorded, you know, over their back. So we did that as a routine each day, give audience first to get their real reactions.
That's awesome.
I love that. Like when Cooper's speaking at the with the merch and the camera's going back and forth on their face as they're instead of doing a two shot, you're going back and forth, back and forth. And also there's this incredible shot of Josh throughout the film where half of his face is out of the frame and the other half is there.
Yes. So much. That's yes. amazing.
Can you talk about the decisions? Well, it's particularly having a dialogue where you're flipping back and forth like that rather than a two shot almost. And just the narrative reasons behind that.
Yeah. So like in that particular example of that scene, you know, I was hyper aware that this was going to be the way everyone was going to be told the story.
Right.
So this individual is going to tell you the premise of the movie. He will be the I see dead people. He's the one. So he's going to convey the tone, and what they're doing is going to convey the kind of, is this grounded? Is it tongue in cheek? Whatever my goal is, this is the tone that you're going to have to know.
He was great.
He was.
Yes.
He is great.
Jonathan,
yes.
He's just a Canadian actor who came and auditioned. He was so lovely, just so funny, and what a wonderful man. Yeah. And so when we were deciding what to do, we were going, let's be hyper intense because something's bothering Cooper, meaning Josh's character. So he brings him into this kind of covert conversation with this t-shirt vendor and they're really just looking directly at each other. So we use this piece of equipment that I put on the lens, which has a mirror on it. So when Josh is looking in the screen, he's seeing Jonathan. When Jonathan's looking at the camera, he's seeing Josh. And so they're staring at each other. It looks like they're staring at the camera, but they're looking at each other.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's like a mirror that shows you that. And so
it's crazy.
And so it's super intense. I use it a lot, you know, in the movies. We get that thing, and we do. I did it on Servant, and lots of. In the old days, they just would have to stare at the lens and imagine.
Yeah. Huh.
But so I use this piece of equipment. So that's what we use for that.
What about what about the half? The half.
And so the half image was basically to say this is where he's. What he feels like when he's getting the compulsion to do bad, this is when he's detaching, you know, and when he's becoming, kind of imprinting on somebody and he has to have this person, you know, this compulsion. And so every time we did that, like that half thing.
Did you frame it also too that the law enforcement agents were closer to him throughout the story?
Yes.
Like I felt like as you got more further into the story, the way that you framed him close to the officers was like tightening.
Yeah, so that was when we were doing all the kind of the extras deciding how to do this, we would say, you know, the net has to fall on the arena quietly. So when he first arrives, there's some, but it's not, you know, not super unusual. But then once he's in, then all the trucks arrive and they fully surround it. So when he goes to the t-shirt stand and he's looking around, this is a little unusual. It feels like it's, you know, and they're facing inward. Not outward, you know, things like that. And so there's lots of little things. And then more and more I put them, then we would map it out. Like, this is now how many SWAT and police officers are now in the vestibule, the area, the hallway, and then now in the bowl. And now they're coming and they're standing in front of the stage. So by the time he gets to the stage, they're everywhere and they've kind of closed in and he's realizing, I'm done.
Wow.
I want you to talk about a moment that happens early in the film, which is when the fans have gathered around to try to get a glimpse of the celebrity as she's coming out to perform. Do you remember the first time that ever happened to you? Do you remember a time when you walked out and you saw people that were gathered to get a glimpse of you? Because there's even a little funny bit where like a security guard comes out and they all go, aw. Yeah. It's not the guy.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It's, you know, the kind of the fame thing because it's an unusual one because it's someone behind the camera that has become, for the most part, has become noticeable to them.
Sure.
So it's a really unusual fame that I have, which is, it you know, when you walk in a restaurant, it's... If one person recognizes and then it starts like a cadence of everyone realizing, oh, wait, that's that guy, you know? So it's really interesting. So I'll get weird things. Like I'll be in a Buddhist temple in, you know, in Kyoto and the Buddhist monk will be like, I love your movies. I'll be like, well, thank you. You know, it's like weird. Like it's deep penetration, but it's fun. I'll tell you one really funny thing, anecdote. We were in Vancouver shooting Wayward Pines. And when I first got to the hotel, there was a big crowd and I signed things and I went inside. Then the next day for the shoot, I saw that they were across the street. There was a whole bunch of people across the street. So I waved like that, went to the shoot, came back. They were still there and I waved. And this went on for a few days. And then I was like, hey, I'm just going to go over and, you know, and I start to go across the street and I realized it was a bus stop. None of those people were my fans. Nothing new. So for 3 days, I was waving to bus stop people.
I love you too.
really, really
humbling. Yes, I am that guy.
Humbling
that,
moment.
That's a great twist.
Yeah.
By the way, I will say that.
We're all wording a lot of our questions carefully. And I frame this next question as what's hopefully, I think, going to be exciting for people listening. In that, I would say half of this movie is not in the trailer. There is a massive chunk of this movie that I didn't even know existed because the marketing is being so careful about it. And I flash back to, I seem to remember on like the special features of the Signs DVD, you telling a story about not wanting from the director of The Sixth Sense in any of the trailers for Signs. And so it made me think about the notes that you give the trailers and what you emphasize you want told and not told. I'm sort of curious, over your career, what is the most important note you've ever given a studio when it comes to a trailer and what to say or what to show or what not to show?
I mean, it's going on right now, and I'm, you know, with Warner Brothers and with each studio and I'm working with, which is the main thing, which was, don't make me look and sound like everyone else. That's not a good instinct for me. You know, I'm, for better or for worse, I'm just different. My movies are different. Mm-hmm. Celebrate that in the cadence of how you're telling the story, in the rhythm of it. Otherwise, if you make it like, you know, montage of incredible things that, you know, you're telling the story in a language as is everyone else. So you're literally taking my one superpower away. Mm-hmm. And I have no IP, so we're not, this isn't Deadpool 10. It's just, you have no way to know what you're eating. So don't pretend it's a cheeseburger. Mm. It's not a cheeseburger. Mm. So you please say it in my language with my accent. You have to reinforce my accent. And at first it'll seem scary to do that, but that's how they're going to stop typing on the computer and look up at the commercial and watch. Mm. Because it's arrhythmic. Yeah. It's not what they're used to.
They did. Do you know how rare it is to be in a screening for three guys who, like, this is our job, and we tend to walk into screenings knowing what's coming, and halfway through the movie, I think I leaned over to you and went, oh, I didn't. Like, did you know any of this was going to be? And yeah. The movie takes a turn where I went, I've not seen any of these clips in the trailer, and I don't, because sometimes you know a trailer so well, and
it makes
you're like,
me so happy what you're saying, like, literally tearing up.
Yeah, it was a refreshing experience because there was no more like, well, I haven't seen that clip that's in the trailer, so I know that clip's coming. At a certain point, I went, oh, I know, I've seen everything now. So now we have an hour left, and I don't know where we're going.
The safety net is gone.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Which is so lovely, right?
That's a great way of putting it. Yeah.
Guardrails are off.
It's like the bumpers are off the bowling alley. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So the, not to blow smoke up Warner Brothers, but I think they did it. The thing that you asked for, they did.
Amazing. Amazing. It's so beautiful because I think one of the things that is a weapon, you know, like when I'm out there kind of, I don't want to say competing, but I am competing for your attention with IP. And the IP is, especially today in 2024, it's so much easier for you guys to remember the second, the third, the fourth, of something else than for me to say, hey, this is a new meal. Mm-hmm. Completely, you know, it's not Chinese food, it's not Brazilian food, it's not Indian food. It's a little bit of, please just come to my restaurant. It's so hard to get... You know, I mean, you guys are, you know, immersed in filmmaking, but just a wonderful lady who's a nurse. I'm trying to get her attention.
Yes.
It's hard with her whole life and everything that's going at her for her to remember, as opposed to, let's say, you know, Minions 4. She got that and can hold on to that. But for me, it's harder. So this stuff is just critical. Yeah. You know,
that's why I like that you call it an experience, because I think that's the right word.
I think that because there's one little crazy kid who's not sitting at his desk in the classroom, I want, you know, there's a way to just, you know, celebrate, you know, that kid just a little bit. So you go, it's not a problem or a mistake, but it's adding to it. So that when you watch Trap, for example, it wasn't made in a studio system. It wasn't talked about with executives. And I'm saying that in the sweetest way, where the executives want to do like, hey, this works. This structure's work. This is what traditionally audiences want. It's unfolding in a way that you get a sense that, oh, the storytellers who did this were just going by instinct. Mm. So when the movie turns where you're talking about and just leaves there, it's, you can feel in the audience, literally it's palpable in the audience where they're like, what?
Yeah.
Mm. It's the surprise in the movie is its structure.
Yes.
That it just keeps unfolding into this place, and a very small place, a quiet place, where it's almost like a two-person thing. And that's the movie that you are watching.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Can you look back at The Sixth Sense, and that's a film that you worked directly with the studio with, that you did not, I'm assuming that was not financed by you, and then now looking at this process and how different that was, because, I mean, last night I was talking to you about this as well, and the idea of how did that process go on The Sixth Sense when you were working directly with the studio system, and here, how does it then project here with the new films?
Gosh, you know, they're hard to compare those worlds because at that point, the system was geared to make these type of movies.
Right.
You know, so that year, obviously we always talk about that year, 1999, but that year, it wasn't a coincidence that, you know, The Matrix came out and American Beauty came out and Magnolia came out and, you know, and Sixth Sense came out and more movies. I could keep going. That's just the studio movies. Mm. And it was geared to that. So it wasn't necessarily geared to IP the way it is geared right now. And maybe because we didn't have there wasn't the internet, there wasn't social media yet, there wasn't any of this stuff. It was easier to get that nurse's attention and say to her, hey, this is a movie named American Beauty. And it's about this, and she could hold it more. Oh, yeah, I want to go see that. I wasn't as much an anomaly at that time there was so many peers. I mean, that's all we were doing.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as difficult to accomplish, but then Bruce was really the protector at that, whereas now I finance them and there's a kind of a mutuality between me and the studios, but Bruce kind of protected it. And it was, still, a modest budget. And it was Bruce who said, leave this kid alone. And he's the one, essentially, he played the protector in that.
Wow. Well, it's crazy if you think about it. That next year, 2000, was X-Men. X-Men came out. Mm-hmm. And so in a weird way, like that 99, 6, that was kind of like the last gasp of like before, mm-hmm. like kind of the before and after, before everything changed.
Yeah, because you're getting the pressure from the world as phones and social media and starts to pick up, as from there, from 2000 on, it just that we don't realize until now where we couldn't have imagined that everyone's walking around doing this.
Yeah.
We couldn't even imagine it. And
well, that's where I want to go then. Because this is a commentary on technology, your movie. Mm. There's iPhones everywhere. Mm. You have to account for the fact that everything's being recorded.
Yes.
It feels very deliberate.
Yeah.
And you use iPhone technology throughout the story to incorporate it, whereas a lot of other filmmakers would run away from it. You know, they almost want to make it timeless. They don't want to include technology. Yeah. Can you just talk about how you wove that into your storytelling and made use of that?
Well, normally I do that. Like that I don't try to have technology in the movie so that it kind of can sit wherever it wants when you watch it, that it's not dated in that way. You're not seeing the big, Miami Vice phone and the thing. but in this case, it was really kind of, for me, underneath, this is just for me, emotionally, what the movie is about. It's a super ride for the audience, super funny and, all of that stuff. But for me, it's kind of a battle of ideology between Cooper and, let's say, Lady Raven, whereas Lady Raven's kind of like, I'm openly giving my life and as a public figure and connecting with everybody. And that I'm going to stay open and vulnerable. And that's something that we all either do where we shut ourselves off, even if our community is just a couple hundred people, whether we're, compartmentalizing. And it is Cooper's feeling about compartmentalizing as a superpower that is the two are fighting each other, this ideology of being connected to everyone versus being shut off from everyone and isolated. Which one is the safer and more powerful way to be in the world? Right. And those two things are constantly battling in the movie.
How do you feel about recording at concerts? Do you record at concerts? Do you record?
You know, when it first started happening, it felt just, I can't believe these people are not present right now.
Yeah.
And they're just recording.
Sure.
It's so the pull to keep it and hold it and have it forever. Or I guess the other pull of like making sure you three know I was there. This is how close I was to you, Kendrick. Take a look.
I heard a story that Prince would like get on stage and say, "Everyone keep their phones in your pockets, and then I'll tell you what song to all pull it out for."
Ooh.
I think that was a cool concept of how like everyone just is present, and then you record the one song.
Yeah. I mean, it's wild to watch when you know. 10,000, 20,000 phones go up.
Like in the movie when she does that.
And then all these phones go up and you see the image of her or the people on stage reflected in all this stuff. It's such a commentary. It's magical, but in this weird way.
Yeah. But thank you for emotionally giving her a reason to turn the light on. Like that really moved me.
Yeah.
Very touching.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about what
it made for one of the best shots of the movie. Whenever it's in the trailer too, but whenever he's sort of like looking around at all the lights.
Yeah, and see for me that shot is the thing I'm talking about.
I just got chills.
He's commenting. It's a battle of his ideology versus her ideology. Going, oh, you're connected to everyone. Yeah, you know, I'm not buying the power of this. Mm-hmm. And he's looking around like that. And yet I was about to say something that would have gotten us in trouble, but it's that versus him and going, you know, I'm going to beat all of you because you don't know who I am.
Oh, there's
going on in
this
movie.
I really
love
it.
Yeah, it's all nuanced.
You were kind enough to come to our screening last night and speak to us a little bit before. And you said something I thought was really interesting, which is people ask me all the time, you know, do all my movies exist in the same universe? And you said, I never thought I was going to be able to keep doing this. So I never imagined that sort of forethought to do that. Is there any part of you that wishes that you could go back and do that? Like, do you wish that all of these movies, like a Tarantino, existed in the same universe?
I think I would have liked that. If I thought of it, I honestly think Trap's my last movie. This is like how I think everything.
You said that last time
I know.
The time before we did this.
Yeah, and there's something beautiful and healthy about doing it like that. Sure. You know,
I say that about Junkets a lot. Not in a morbid way, but like treat everyone like, hey, this is it. This was a good run.
This is it. And you should be able to stand by it. Like if Trap's the last one, it's all good.
Yeah.
That one really represent all of my love. That's the best I can do. Mm. And, you know, I'm it's all on the, all there. And it's me. I know. No, there was no excuses. Mm. Right. So it's all me. So that feeling and with that feeling. So but I feel very lucky, you know, 16 movies to direct, not counting producing and the TV show. 16 times I've been able to sit across from wonderful people like you. It's crazy. But I didn't have on movie one. I was like, dude, you know, I got to trick them into letting me do another one.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was that. So when Sixth Sense, when it was about to come out, I was like, write as fast as you can and get someone to commit to this comic book thing.
Wow.
Yeah. It was desperate. Like, I was desperate. Like, I tricked them.
And I love that comic book thing, it became one of the top five greatest superhero movies of all time. Like, it's a massive
shot on the train as the camera. Oh, it's like one of my favorite shots that you've ever had in your movies. This is a big picture question. You're talking about 16 films that you've made. And I would imagine every movie that you make changes you as a person in ways like from the thematics of the storyline, the relationships you build with the people you're working with. But I would imagine every film teaches you something different about the world and gives you perspective.
Could you
go through a couple of your films and talk about the lessons you learned in your own life from the movies that you made? Maybe Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs, even Trap. I'm just curious if you could pinpoint things that have changed you as a person.
We could pick any of them, but you know, like just we've been talking about a couple of them. Like Unbreakable was really kind of me pushing my value system of cinema as far as I could go, like almost just focusing solely on my relationship to cinema. And it just happened to be about comic books. So we did, you know, every shot was a one-er. There was no coverage. It was very dangerous way to make a movie because there's only 400 cuts in the movie, roughly. Are you serious? In the whole movie. It's just one long shot.
How many on average would be?
You know, like you can have, you know, like a big action sequence can have 400.
Yeah. Look how many cuts are in the shower scene in Psycho.
Yeah. This is a lot, you know, so it was that was me kind of going, hey, I love cinema, and so I want to push, you know. And so that was a wonderful feeling. I felt that a little bit as well on The Village, where I had that same instinct to kind of push cinema a bit. But then there's the other side of me, which is don't formalize and don't use your brain as much. Try to go from this place, like jazz place, a little bit. And so movies like Lady in the Water and The Visit kind of come a little bit from that place, you know, of like jazz, you know, because I can control this process of telling this movie with my craft to the point that I can get us to a good place, but that's not good enough. You can't just use that part of your brain. You have to risk. You have to go out there and just do something that you're not sure is going to work and risk them going, it doesn't work. You know, when people receive your art, they only have the information at that moment. They don't, and they're taking a guess. And I've learned this over time. I'm still learning it, which is to be gracious about people's guess about your work. They're just guessing at that moment. Only time will tell whether Picasso's just making, you know, scribbles. Yeah. Is there resonance there? And then we all learn from him.
Wow.
You know, and so for all of us going from that instinct and maybe, you know, that jazz thing. And so in Trap, for me, there's a lot of both in there. This is the most shots I ever did.
How many edits are in this?
I mean, a ton. But it was this, me and my storyboard artist and Seo, the cinematographer. I just didn't try to manhandle it the opposite way of Unbreakable. I was like, it wants to have this energy. I'm just going to allow it. Mm. So it had the most shots. So every day I had the most shots every day because I still don't do many days of shooting. And that energy gave it this kind of the way Cooper thinks is different. Huh. Like, I'll tell you, this is because this is kind of like a nerdy, wonderful
podcast. We always say you're the perfect guest for the show. Like,
so normally, I choose someone. So in this scene, like, let's say this is the scene in the movie, I will choose this character or one of you, and I will lean the shots towards you. And by that meaning, so every other movie except Trap, if it's my scene, my shots will be a little closer than your shots. So mine will be like, you know, close-ups, and yours will be, you know, the movie, then the audience is empathizing with me more because they're feeling the intensity of my emotions more. And it was strange when we were boarding Trap. It was the reverse because of who Cooper is. It's so weird. I mean, it was instinctual as we were writing. It was the reverse. Brilliant. If you watch it, like, she's talking to the mom or whatever, he's slightly farther away because he's like, you know... He's not really there.
Dude,
so he's just observing her. Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, everything's fine.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's just that. It's the weird, like, that only comes by just being free and feeling it. So something I've done for 15 movies, the rule flipped on this movie because of the character. And that's when you're really listening.
Whoa.
You know, to what you're talking about.
Awesome. Huh. See, and that's the beauty of you. You're still hungry and you're still learning. At your success and where you are in this game, like, you're still like a kid learning filmmaking
the best way. Man, you know, that's why it's so hard for someone, let's say a musician who wrote a song that changed our lives at 24.
Yeah.
Can't do it at 54.
Right. Huh.
They've stopped doing this. Why? Of course, this is so freaking painful. It's like, why would you do this other than the joy of being beginning? And now with my daughters, you know, working with them, they're at the beginning, so they're free. Mm. And so they're reminding me, you're not safe, and that's a wonderful thing.
Okay, I want to go to that next, because legitimately there's a moment early on where the daughter goes, maybe I'll be a singer one day, and Josh has to be like, yeah, maybe. But like, you had to have that conversation.
Yes.
And your daughters are enormously talented. Like, it's almost not fair. You could retire and just coast on their royalties now for the rest of your career. But you had that conversation where Shauna came to you and was like, I'd like to be a director one day. And now, knowing all you know, how do you walk that line between, of course, you want to be supportive. You know,
yeah.
Of course you want to say, chase your dream. But you can tell her so many things now that you couldn't 20 years ago.
Well, this is a really deep conversation. The familial value system that's being passed down. And for me, in our house, and they know this, the girls, this isn't a field or a thing where you go to validate yourself, or you want others to validate you, or you want to be rich or famous or whatever. Don't do that. That's not, and I said, don't just do anything else but the arts. Mm. There's too many people doing this in the world to prove who they are. This is to be about you and the art form, you and the characters, whether it's in a song or a story or a poem or a movie, whatever it is, your relationship to them and how does your craft help you tell their story. That's it. Everything else will go well. It'll be whatever. If you have enough to have a one-bedroom apartment because of that, man, that one-bedroom apartment came from you and this one thing in your fantastic. So, and I'm super hard on them. So if I sense corruption in them in this subject, they will get the hammer because you just can't do that. It hurts your soul. You know, we don't want someone else who reminds us, hey, if you don't be yourself, you can get rewarded for that.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm going to cut you loose on this because I want to end by talking about an ending. 20th anniversary of The Village, a movie that the three of us absolutely love.
Oh, thank
and
you.
I think more than any ending of any of your movies, it's the one where I most go, well, what happens next? I've thought about it for the last 20 years. I've been thinking, well, some big things are about to go down. Like, it's whether they're going to be invaded or whatever the case may be. Do you know what happens next?
You know, that ending changed a bit. You know, I had shot a different ending for The Village. And
can we ask what it is?
Yeah, it was it's funny. I thought for a long time about putting it on the Blu-ray. I intentionally didn't because it was so different and it would make such a, you would change your memory of the movie so much because it was so alternate path. So basically, like, she came out and everyone found out about it, found out about the place, and it kind of basically blows up essentially. And there was something, and then, you know, literally, like, there we were, the Jay-Z's song, like, I was thinking about putting 99 Problems, like, this is before it came out, the Black Album, and I was thinking of putting that as the thing, because, like, she comes and literally, like, a car almost hits her, but the guy driving it, which was me, by the way,
yes,
and it was listening to Jay-Z's 99 Problems. That was the ending of the movie. Like, I almost hit her, and, like, you're hearing him, 99 Problems, what a, and they want, so you basically, the value system just goes flip at the end. And what ended up happening, it was so, my wife loves that ending. She saw it and was like, that was the end.
Oh, you shot it? You did shoot it?
No, we shot it.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's so provocative that it was so polarizing. Because, like, people got, like, offended because, like, you're hearing cursing. And it's like, immediately, you went from, like, Little House on the Prairie to, boom. Yeah, Jay-Z. So it was really exciting. So anyway, but the idea of the way it is now, where they make a decision to continue this way of life is, you know, was really powerful and poignant in that kind of, you know, tableau of them standing at the end and making the decision where we're all like, it's worth it for this. I mean, we'd all want that for our kids, kind of like if we could make a world where they were, where we think they're safer, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. But yeah, it's fun. God, man, all of them are essentially, you know, like Unbreakable is an obvious one, but all of them are a little bit like the first act or an origin story,
sure.
You know, and even this, you know, Trapped, like an origin story.
We're left wondering in the best way possible.
Yeah, you know, what was really cool about Trapped was we had this one, we had an audience screening of the movie, and the person at the end was just like, you know, they were all like so buzzed and excited, and they said, I don't know why she asked it. She said, how many of you want a sequel? And the entire audience raised her hand. I was like, yikes.
Traps.
Yeah,
traps.
Like the Cameron thing and with the little dollar sign. Yeah.
Traps with a dollar sign.
But we love you, man. And seriously, you've been very kind to the show for a long time. So thank you. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
and we're all about to get you for TV as well.
Thank you. So much. Really good to Thanks, see you. Brothers.
We want to thank both M. Night Shyamalan and our very good friends at Warner Brothers for hooking us up with that interview. Always love having Night on the show. He is welcome back anytime. We're going to talk Trap, which is opening in theaters this weekend. We are not going to discuss spoilers at all, so you can feel free to listen to this brief reaction to this movie. I think Jake and I are on the same page. Mm-hmm. We both like this movie a good amount. This is a lot of fun.
By good amount, I would say half.
Good amount by half. What do you mean?
So I have been making the argument that Trap is basically two movies. This should intrigue anyone who has not seen the film yet. Everything that you've seen in the trailer for this movie is in the first half of the movie.
Meaning the concert stuff.
Yes, the concert. There is a moment that happens about halfway through where I leaned over to Sean and went, oh, like, I was not expecting that. And that means from here on out, like, nothing that we've seen in the trailers is the rest of the movie. And that's a very intriguing feeling to not know, like, oh, well, there's still that one scene that I know is in the trailer that hasn't happened yet. So it has to come at some
point. Which is why I recommend, if you can avoid it, don't watch trailers.
Yes, always. Yes.
Yeah.
I really loved the concert half of the movie. I thought it was a really tight, tense, smart thriller that to a certain degree requires you to have a lapse in reality for a moment. But I never once went, oh, get the fuck out of here. Like, I was always with it, you know, even if I had to go, Okay. All right. I'll buy it.
And just in case you're listening to this and you don't know what's going on, it's a father played by Josh Hartnett who brings his daughter to a concert.
A Taylor Swift-like concert.
Yeah. And he finds out that the entire concert has been staged as a trap to capture a serial killer who has been stalking Philadelphia. And you learn early on that Hartnett's character is the serial killer.
Mm-hmm. And they put that in the trailer. For
not like an M. Night twist. And it's more like, cat and mouse, can he get out of it? Can he get out of this concert situation?
Yeah. So. The second half of the film is wildly different from the first. And while I did not dislike the second half of the film, for me, it lost a lot of the energy. I was less forgiving of the lapses of reality that I felt like were required of me. Mm. While the first half, I kind of thought, well, this is fun, so I'll kind of let that go. The second half, I started going, okay, that's a little bit harder for me to let go. That's a little bit harder for me to buy. So I did not like the second half of the movie nearly as much as I really loved the first half. Mm-hmm. So for me, the downside is that it ended on sort of a deflated bit of a bummer. Mm-hmm. That being said, I thought Hartnett's performance was, to me, the strength of the entire thing. Like, he's even great. In the moments I did not love, Sean, you said it perfectly. He understood. He understood what the movie was.
Yeah.
And he sold it 100%. And I'm curious, Sean, I'll say this and then I'll jump it over to you. Talking to everyone after the screening, it really felt like a lot of people either liked the one half or the other. There are plenty of people who said, Jake, you're wrong. The first half is not that good. The second half is where it gets good. So,
bizarre, but I didn't meet anyone
who liked both halves.
Interesting.
Sean, I don't know. Sean, what did you think?
Except Knight, I guess. You're right. And I wanted to definitely mention that a lot of people we talked to afterwards were either choosing which half of the film they preferred. You could it's very clearly split in two. Mm-hmm. The movie. There's the concert part, which they sell.
That was a different movie he made.
This film was unbreakable.
I agree with you that Hartnett sells the entire thing. I will lead by saying that the script is extremely silly. And there are a lot of ways that Hartnett gets out of certain things and that other characters get out of certain things where you're just like, come on, like, would that happen? But I was having so much fun with it. Because to me, and I'm going to say it this way, because this is what M. Night told us before the movie started, and I think that this will help a lot of people to frame it and better appreciate it. He said, try to imagine that this is a 1990s throwback thriller. Like, to me, this movie should have the Dimension logo at the beginning of it. Like, it just feels like
that. And you're renting it on a Friday night from Blockbuster.
100%. I mean, it's you're just going along for a ride and... You know, yes, you have to suspend disbelief for a couple of things that happened in it. But I thought Hartnett was so entertaining, and I thought some other of the supporting players around it were so dialed into the tone of the piece that it worked for me. I definitely leaned over to Jake a couple times during the screening and I was like, this is good. Is this good? I'm enjoying this. This is really fun. Yes, you're right. I thought it loses some momentum, but I actually think it actually picks it back up towards the end. Mm-hmm. And so it left me in a place where I was actually ultimately satisfied. So I got what I wanted out of it. You know, like I didn't expect it to be great. I thought it was a lot of fun. I think Hartnett is great. I think some of the supporting parts are really good.
I mean, this isn't the mark. We always sort of bitch about Rotten Tomatoes. So by no means is this like the marker, but whenever I feel like I give a muddled review, I always try to give a clarification. If I were on Rotten Tomatoes, which I am not, I would give it a fresh.
I would too.
I definitely lean more toward, because I, like I said, I never once disliked the movie.
Mm-hmm. You know, we did this at one point. We should come up with our own scale. I feel like we did at one point. We should come up with some sort of, we can do this off air, but some sort of, you should see it versus a,
Three blenders.
Three blenders. How many blenders? If we can get Vitamix to sponsor that segment. No. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome. I'll take that. Listen, cash.
Whoever wants to sponsor us, we'll make your your thing, whatever it is, the rating.
Yeah. So Jake enough. And I recommend definitely checking out Trap.
And also too, just and again, this isn't a reason we should always say go out and so, but like, he is an original filmmaker who is trying to put original, you know, look, no one loves Marvel stuff more than this show. And you know, this isn't a knock to those kinds of movies, But if we're going to sit here and champion movies like Deadpool, Wolverine.
Right.
And listen, look, I mean, M. Night Shyamalan, you know, he's not you know, indie filmmaker making a movie for $84 trying to get in four theaters. Like, he still has the support of Warner Brothers, which,
sure.
You know, but he is still an independent filmmaker
in his way.
Yes. And he's still financing them himself, correct?
I believe so. Yeah. I could be wrong.
So, I mean, I think that should be rewarded.
I also would like to point out that the music mm-hmm. that's done by his daughter, Salika.
Yes. Yes.
Is good.
Yes, it is. Well, and you perfectly pointed out the movie does not work if it's not.
Right. You have to spend half the movie in a concert. And if the music is really bad, it's going to take you out of it. And yeah. I actually enjoyed her songs and she's putting out the album.
Yeah.
It might be out now. There's going to be like a soundtrack album that goes with this. And I would recommend
it. I remember
it
when they dropped the trailer thinking like, what is that song? That's a good song that they're using in the trailer. And it turns out to be one of the character songs in the movie. Yeah.
It's really cool. So, all right. Recommended. Go check out Trap. Let us know in the comments what you thought of it. If you get a chance to go see it, support M. Night, friend of the show. And as we said, an original filmmaker out there trying to do original things. Let's take a really quick ad break. And on the other side of it, Deadpool and Wolverine, spoiler-filled reaction.
Spoiler-filled reaction.
Spoiler-filled reaction.
This is all staying in. We haven't gone to a break yet. Here we go. See you guys.
And we're back.
And we are back. All right. So the behemoth at the box office. Marvel Studios, back where they belong. Top of the charts, Deadpool and Wolverine dominating the box office, re-energizing a fan base. I don't know. Some people also kind of slung it, you know, slung some arrows at it.
Those arrows were already sharpened before they walked in the theater.
Perhaps they forgot what a Deadpool movie is, because this is very much a Deadpool movie.
Yeah.
It is also, I think, an incredibly good Wolverine story. I don't even want to compare it to Logan. I think Logan was its own thing and succeeded extremely well for what it was.
Logan is like a once every 25 years kind of movie.
Yeah. And, you know, Mangold is Mangold and Sean Levy. I think they're going to make the kind of movie that they make. And this is Ryan Reynolds' fingerprints all over it. So we are going to discuss Deadpool and Wolverine. This will be spoiler filled. All bets are off. We're just going to give our reactions to it. I want to sort of start off with a couple of stories. I was lucky enough. This was an incredible experience to be able to attend the world premiere of the film in New York City. The full cast was there, got to watch it with Reynolds and Jackman and seeing them, you know, hug at the end of the movie and just celebrate how well it went over. Played like gangbusters. If anyone's seen it, you know that it's a crowd pleaser. You know, it has these huge, huge moments, big cameos from anticipated actors. The opening sequence to NSYNC's Bye 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 plays, you know, so well. It just sets the tone for what's coming. To me, I don't think anything can sort of top the moment where Hugh Jackman puts the mask on finally, and we get our look at Wolverine in the full costume, which was incredible. And then a couple of days later, because Gabe and I went immediately to San Diego Comic-Con, on Thursday night of Comic-Con, they were touting this Deadpool and Wolverine Celebration of Life panel that they were going to do. And Feige was going to be there with Ryan and Hugh. And they ended up showing the movie again. Now, our Disney reps had told me going into it, hey, make sure you stick around. And I'm glad they told me that because I was going to leave. I was going to wait till the movie started, duck out, just make sure no news was kind of announced. And then grab food or something like that. And they were like, no, stick around. You're going to want to be there till the end. And that was, I'm sure people have probably seen the video now by this point, where Ryan Reynolds brings out Jennifer Garner and Daphne Keene and Chris Evans and Wesley Snipes and Channing Tatum. And it was just great to see, you know, all of them get an opportunity to bask in the glow of 7,000 Marvel fans who are watching Deadpool and Wolverine opening weekend. And I will say, I got so excited as we got closer to the moment where he puts the mask on, because I was like, oh, these people are going to see it for the first time. You know, like, I knew the moment was coming.
Yeah, that's cool.
God, dang, it just played so well. It just was incredible. Now, I think the movie is a little bit of a mess storyline. I think it plays better the second time, where I nitpicked it a little bit less. I think the motivations of Wolverine in terms of like why he went so bad is cleared up a little bit more in a second time. It didn't strike me as being so drastic the first time through. Yeah.
I think we had talked about, I wish they had just showed it more than they told it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he essentially dips out to a bar, and while he's gone, humanity comes and kills the X-Men somehow successfully.
Yeah.
And then he goes on a rampage and kills humanity, and then thereby turns humans against the X-Men. So he's kind of responsible for the, not responsible for the extinction, but for the hatred that's felt by the mutants against them.
I think, doesn't he say, though, that, like, I think he's the only one left. Like, I think he does, like, the retaliation, and then they, like, were like, fine, we're just going to wipe you out, I think is what they imply, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
But I also, I'm not saying a little bit of Deadpool goes a long way, but the Ryan Reynolds shtick for 2 straight hours, it's funny, but I was more in the digging the Wolverine bits. Like, I think Hugh Jackman brings so much more gravitas, you know, an emotional weight to it, and Deadpool's not supposed to. Like, I mean, I'm not wishing that on the character. I don't want to see a dramatic performance from Deadpool, but you know, Deadpool can be a lot after a little while. So, ultimately, I ended up giving the movie 4 out of 5. I thought the fan beats were incredible. I think Jackman gives one of the better performances as Wolverine. I just thoroughly enjoyed him. It doesn't move the MCU forward. Like, it sets up a couple of things that could pay off later. It's also pretty contained. You know, it's not like it's deep into the MCU and that you have to know a lot to know what's going on. I can see somebody who's just going into it because they want to see a Deadpool movie being completely lost by the TVA stuff and not really getting what's going on with all that. And the multiverse hopping is, you know, unless you're a little bit up to speed, I can see you being lost by it. But in general, for someone who just wants to go for, you know, a great 2-hour ride with superheroes, I think I'd be surprised if you came out of that disappointed. So 4 out of 5 for me. And Jakey, where are you at? Did you go as high or?
I'm probably at about a 4.5 out of 5.
Oh, wow.
I really thought it was great. I'm also with you in that, like, I remember going into that movie thinking, man, what the hell did this Wolverine do that made him the worst one? Yeah. And, you know, whenever we saw the first 35 minutes before the junket in New York, we got hints that he did something terrible. But in that 35 minutes, you don't find out what it is. And I just remember thinking, what the shit did he do? And I remember getting to the point where they sort of explained what he did. And I sort of thought, that's it? That's what makes him the worst Wolverine? Like, he got drunk at a bar? Like, then we're all the worst Wolverine.
right. But that's the issue, is they then have to explain, yeah, but then he killed a bunch of people. Like they do, sure, that rather than,
and
just,
I agree with you, it should have been a show me, don't tell me. But yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is just a nitpick. I mean, there are so many incredible, fun moments. You know, I will say one of the things I most appreciate about this movie, if you go back and find old episodes of Real Blend, I was very adamant about my main fear of this movie being that it was just going to be cameo, cameo, cameo. Look at this person. Mm-hmm. Look at that person. And I got to say, like, everyone keeps calling, you know, Channing Tatum and Chris Evans and Wesley Snipes cameos. To me, those are like supporting characters. Those mm-hmm. are like, I would not call those cameos. Now, there were quick, yeah, like, you know, the Hulk I would call a cameo, or, you know, Jon Favreau I would call a cameo. But like, I'm a, sure. like the big names, the ones we were all trying to keep secret, mm-hmm. I got to give them credit. I was really impressed at how integral they were to the actual story, how big a part Blade and Gambit, right, and Elektra played to the, well, into the,
like,
main,
like,
storyline.
Is a cameo like contained to one scene, but if you break out of more than one scene, is it like, okay, well, now you're just kind of a supporting role of some size.
But also, like, ultimately, not to get so metaphysical, but like, the if the point of the movie is we all worked really hard on these Fox Marvel movies, mm-hmm. and now you have your cinematic universe, and we're just not a part of it anymore. You know, like, that's the plot. And yeah. So these characters that were integral to those movies are yeah. part of the plot. Like, the fact yeah. that they're in
it
the
worked
void
out really well too. Yeah.
is yeah. the reason.
Yeah.
You know,
it's it feels like, you know, now that the dust has settled for a couple of, you know, it's been out for almost a week, and we're able to sort of step back, and we can sort of really look at this movie very much as, and that you know, the Green Day song, you know, Good Riddance playing over the
montage.
Yeah, the montage at the end very much to me solidify like, oh, this is a love letter to those movies that came out whenever I was in middle school and high school. And I, sure. I loved those movies. You know, I loved the Fox super, the good and the bad ones. You know, I liked it. I remember going to see the Fantastic Four movies and liking those. You know, I didn't pick stuff apart the way. I don't think I ever really truly liked Elektra, if I'm being honest with you.
No, Elektra's a bad movie.
Yeah, I liked Daredevil. I liked Affleck's Daredevil. And so I really like the respect that it seemed to play those. My big thing, and this has always been my fear with the Deadpool movies, is that so much of the humor relies around this moment in time. Cool. And how well are those jokes going to go over in when we revisit these movies in 20 years?
But is that okay? Like, we don't.
I mean, like, I don't know. Like, but
can
like,
it just be of its moment? You know, like.
I guess so. But I love. I mean, I recently went back and rewatched all quite a few of the X-Men movies to get ready for. And I'm amazed at like those movies are almost a quarter. The first one is quarter century old, and is just as good right now as it was when I watched it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be the same. The Deadpool movies.
I think that's tough with comedy. You know, it is really.
And I think that's my thing. I forget Deadpool is a comedy. I think I forget that.
I expect that looking back on it, rather than being like, oh, wow, this is just as good or whatever, like that kind of movie have. I think the jokes will make you feel nostalgic in the way that they feel dated.
Sure.
You know, like they'll make a reference. You'll be like, oh, that's right. They did buy them out and there was a big hole.
Channing Tatum was supposed to play Gambit.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But I don't mean to sound like I'm I genuinely really do love this movie, but you know, I walked out of the movie going, man, like that was really great. And I would rank that at like 8, 9, or 10 in my top 10 Marvel rankings. And cause I, you know, there were so many moments where I was like, shit, I can't believe I'm looking at this thing. That's actually, just Jackman in the suit, I thought looked incredible.
Yep.
But I remember, I think there were just so many people out there that hyped this movie to be something that it was never going to be. A buddy of mine, called me after I tweeted my reaction. He goes like, dude, just top 10 Marvel. And I was like, well, I mean, that's
pretty good.
Pretty good. That's good. What do you know? And he goes, is it as good as Logan? And I'm like, no, it's not as good as Logan. He's like, so it's not as good as like a Dark Knight. And I'm like, no, it's not as good as like that. I was like, Deadpool. That cannot be your bar. You know, you can't that if you are setting yourself up for disappointment.
Right,
if you walk
into
this movie,
I think it hit the reasonable. Well, not even the reasonable, like the unreasonable bar. In a different realm, which is get people excited about the MCU, make the MCU exciting, put together a good movie revolving around the MCU and what's to come. I feel like that did it for the first time in a long time. That felt like a high bar of like everyone was coming in and saying this needs to make it all good again. And in a lot of ways, it feels like it's exciting again.
Yeah,
I think it met.
I do have a question about the future of the MCU, and this could potentially lead into our Comic-Con conversation. I still don't. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember. Kevin and I got into a massive, massive, massive fight on this show about how Deadpool was going to realistically be used in the MCU. And I still feel like this movie hasn't shown that to us yet, because even though this movie is an MCU movie, it still very much is a Deadpool movie.
And the MCU is not going to continue
We're talking about like Secret Wars, a movie that like is by the time it comes out will be decades in the making and will be a very serious, you know, collection of superheroes who have to take down Dr. Doom.
Sure.
I just don't see a scenario which in the middle of this big, huge, epic fight scene where Deadpool is going to stop and look at the camera and talk to us. I still do not see that working out. Gabe, share your idea.
I had an idea for that. And I don't know if there's like examples of Deadpool in other people's comics and like maybe there's a thing there. I thought that it would be fun that when Deadpool's in a MCU movie, not a non-Deadpool movie, that he's just kind of viewed as like a bit insane. And so they'll be like having a conversation and he'll be faced the other way. And they'll be like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And that's him breaking the fourth wall in his movie.
So kind of like Fleabag when the priest starts noticing that she's breaking the fourth wall. And he's like, who are you talking to?
Yeah. But less like, but frame it where it feels a little bit more grounded.
Yeah.
And he can just kind of be a guy that kind of lost his mind.
So does he still talk to us or do they?
No.
So he doesn't.
He's just a snarky, like says an inappropriate. He's just the guy that says the inappropriate thing. But when it comes to like. Disney doesn't, you know, he mentions Disney like it's just we won't get that. Those quotes would be.
That would be very interesting.
Because then at that point, you could kind of muddle and hide whatever language or inappropriate things he might be saying that would otherwise get
that,
something like Secret Wars
they
R
just,
rating.
They just write him out of all of that stuff, and he just lives in his own movies. Like, that doesn't feel very Marvel-y,
nothing about Deadpool and Wolverine proved to me that he can still exist within the MCU.
I saw someone discussing, Sean, and I'm interested in your thoughts, which I thought was really interesting, is that there's still, like, this isn't the last we're going to see of the other universes, like the Fox universe and things, and that the Fox mutants are going to be the mutants that we have through Secret Wars, and then when the events of Secret Wars, which as I understand, I'm reading it now, sort of resets the timeline or like solidifies the timeline into one kind of thing, whatever the story does in the comics, that's then the moment where we get the quote unquote MCU X-Men, MCU mutants and things like that, and that they're gonna use those as the characters now so that we can reuse them later. So that was interesting.
Yeah. Let me touch on that right now. And then I'll get into. And then we'll get into.
Very
let
serious.
Me tell you.
I
let me tell that. You what's going to happen.
Oh, perfect.
Let me tell
right
you
now.
Yes, I believe by the end of Deadpool and Wolverine that certain members of the Fox universe, the ones that they want to continue to use, are parked in Earth 10,005.
Did you okay? Really quick before you continue, did you expect to see any of the OG X-Men? Because I did. And if I'm being honest, I was a little disappointed that I thought because he name dropped Cyclops, Storm and Beast.
Yeah.
That those were going to be the three that we saw. And he was finally going to be able to show them like, look,
Would that have been because Jackman's Wolverine is very much in a serious movie. If that makes sense. Yeah. Like in a way, like he has that moment in the van where he's like actually mad yelling at him. They let him have a really like Hugh Jackman emotional moment.
Mm hmm.
You'd have to kind of write in like he's seeing his friends that were slaughtered, you know, like in a new universe. Like that would be like a big.
That. I would have liked that. That like that. That totally.
But I think you can get
trailer.
That later. I think you can get that later. You can get that later.
Okay. All right.
Because we saw Kelsey Grammer's Beast somewhere.
Yeah.
At the end of the Marvels, and so that could be the universe that Deadpool's in right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that eventually we're going to get to a point where all of the heroes that are in their different universes are going to get plucked for Secret Wars. They're all going to have to team up from their different universes and fight in Secret Wars. So Secret Wars ultimately is, I think, going to have Toby and Andrew, and they'll pluck Hugh back from his world with Deadpool. Like we might not see Deadpool in the traditional Avengers sense until Secret Wars.
So
unless they have another project where it's like building into Secret Wars.
Do you think we don't see Wolverine till then? Because like, I mean, Jackman's not getting, they can't keep asking him to do that. That's like, that's literally unhealthy for him to do that.
But he seems pretty excited though. Like he seems pretty, and the new suit, if he's in that new suit, I mean, they can pad that suit, buddy.
Absolutely.
You don't have to take that
shirt. It's almost like he showed himself without the shirt at the very end of Deadpool to be like,
one day,
this is it. This is it. We're done after this, and now it's suit from here on.
I did love that great shot because I love that orchestral version of Madonna.
Oh,
when
my
Deadpool,
God.
Like, looked at his abs.
So
what you're saying is Secret Wars is going to cost, because what was in game was like $500 million, and Secret Wars is going to cost $1 billion just
probably,
to make.
Yeah.
It's going to have to become the highest grossing film of all time just to break even. just to break even. Yeah.
But really, isn't that the lesson of Deadpool and Wolverine? It's like people want to see all these heroes together. Like, I think that's something that draws people out, draws the casual comic book fan out.
It's a boring conversation, but I'm curious the business of that. Like, at some point, you just have to give every actor points on the back end and be like, we can't pay you all $10 million.
Yeah.
You know, like there's fucking 40 of you.
And if Downey joins the cast, we're already in the hole, baby.
It makes me wonder, like, what does Channing Tatum get for being in Deadpool and Wolverine? You know, like
you're talking about money wise.
What is Jennifer Garner pulling? You know, are they doing it as a favor esque to Ryan and Sean Levy?
I'm sure they get some sort of respectable fee. And I imagine, like, you know, it's if you look at it, Jennifer Garner was in this is an Adam project. So she's worked, you know, not that like she's doing a favor, but you get the goodwill show. Friend of the show, come in, you know, agents will figure it out. But like, you're not going to come in and try to, you know, own this project.
Yeah. Sure.
Channing, I think you got to think about he, and they joke about it in the movie, which I love, is, you know, sometimes they didn't even get a chance to see your movie. Yeah. And it was a passion project with him for years. Like, to say, like, hey, we're going to spend real money on making you look cool and like the special effects of your, like, you get to do it.
Did you guys see that he wore the same shirt at Comic-Con that he wore when they announced him as Gambit?
That was very cool. And Evans, like, does Evans need the cash? Like, Evan doesn't.
God,
need
I mean, Evans. When you think he's going to say Avengers Assemble and he says so Flame good. On.
Yeah, so I mean, he's a part of the family. He's a part of both families, which is really special.
Like, this is what I'm saying. Just, I think that there are deep discounts that are being done across the board.
What do they call it? The hometown discount?
Friends and family discount or something like that.
There you go.
But if you have to get Ian McKellen and Holly,
you got to get
Holly
three Spider-Men
and all three Spider-Men. It's getting insane. It's getting a little bit insane. In addition to, you know, if it's really going to feature everybody, you know, are you bringing in Daredevil? Are you bringing in Kamala Khan? Are you bringing in all these characters?
Which Daredevil?
Which Daredevil? Right. Exactly.
Jesus. Said,
I don't envy the Russo brothers. So let's skip to them. Jake, your thoughts on the Russos coming back for two Avengers films. Does that move the needle for you in any way?
I mean, look, I haven't necessarily loved what they've done since Marvel, but you cannot deny what they did under that Marvel banner. Like, they created some of the greatest cinematic moments of all time. You know, I mean, it's known on this show that I'm not a massive Endgame fan. Like, I liked it fine, but
you're more
I'm more of an Infinity War guy, but also I love Civil War and I love Winter Soldier. Like,
and you also have to those movies are unlike any other production. Like, you have to really give a little bit of respect to, regardless of, like, you know, they're smaller movies, whether you like those stories or not, or this, that, and the other, the skill and the experience and the ability to wield that production with that much talent, with that much story, and and create something cohesive. Yeah, that's
So that's, I mean, I have total faith that it's going to be something special. And I think there's a reason that I read on Variety or something that one of Downey's stipulations was that it be the Russo brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I think so.
Well, I mean, at the beginning of the MCU, remember, it was kind of like Joss Whedon was going to handle the Avengers movies and everyone else is going to do the cool. We're going to hire the independent filmmakers to do some sort of flavorful spin on the MCU. And I'm told, I mean, imagine if they just come back every 7 years or whatever to do a big team up movie and, you know, help produce everything else. Like, that feels like a bit of structure in the MCU that was lost after Ultron.
Yeah, for sure. Because it is strange that, like, Destin Daniel Cretton was signed up for one of the Avengers films. I think Ryan Coogler was potentially in line for one of the other Avengers films. And now it's just like, no, we're going back to the Russos.
And those are, I mean, again, this is nothing to slight the Russos. I enjoyed Cherry and I've enjoyed some of their other movies, but, like, I want to see the Russos big blockbuster. I don't mind seeing the Ryan Coogler and Destin Daniel Cretton indie film. You know, like, they're going to spend their time making two or three other movies versus an Avengers. Yeah. Like, I'm cool with that.
Or even, you know, develop your world, you know, have Destin Daniel Cretton go back to the Shang-Chi universe and keep building that out. Have Ryan Coogler keep making Black Panther films because they're good, you know, and I don't want to force him into the Avengers film because he's the big name.
God, I didn't even think about it. They have to be a part of it, too.
Yeah.
Jesus, I didn't even think of it.
This is so many people that have to be part of it.
Yeah.
All right. And so let's talk about Downey coming back.
So what was that like in the room before we get there? Everyone's seen the video.
Yeah. I gotta hear the story about
that.
We're
talking about a guy who was in the room for.
Yeah.
Gabe, where were you in this moment? Could you hear?
I was. Because
you were on the press line.
So the press line is in a hotel on the other side of the street.
Got it. Okay.
But what was cool is the way the Marvel press line works is they start sending people to the press line while it's going. So everyone who's on the press line, all the people with the cameras and the holding mics and stuff, are doing what we were doing, which is getting updates from their team that's inside and being and everyone just goes, Downey's back. It's just the whole room gets kind of wild. And then in the middle of that, Harrison Ford shows up and everyone's like, oh shit, okay, hang on, Harrison Ford.
Start the car.
But Sean, in the room, I mean.
So it's in this sense, those things, both the return of the Russos and Downey playing Doom, were rumored enough, you know, that, like, as it was happening, I wasn't blown away. Like, I wasn't like, oh my God, because I was like, oh, I guess I'd heard it from enough people that it could happen.
It makes you wish that you kind of just would go, just watch it happen. You know, like, you envy like the kind of casual fan in those moments.
100%. I can think about being in Hall H for other announcements that Marvel has done that I wasn't expecting. The biggest one being when they announced that Avengers 2 was going to be called Age of Ultron. No one knew. You know, and it literally, everyone was kind of curious, like, who's going to be the big bad villain and all that. And the big Avengers logo came on. And then I can remember it very clearly phasing up and saying Age of Ultron, and that the hall lost its mind. I don't think we knew that it was possible that, like, Ultron could become a villain.
Were you in the room when they announced Batman versus Superman?
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes. That was a huge one.
Because no one knew. No one really knew that, right?
No.
That was like a logo reveal. Didn't they have like the.
It was. The big Superman logo was up, and then the Dark Knight. The Frank Miller
shrouded it or whatever
fat came behind. Oh, that was great. Oh, and Harry Lennox came out and read the passage from Frank Miller's graphic novel. So anyway, it was weird in the way that they structured it, because they were like, the Russos are coming out and they're going to do Avengers Secret Wars. And then they kind of had to backpedal and be like, well, but we can't do Secret Wars until we've introduced this very important character. So we're going to have to do this first. And then it was like Avengers Doomsday, which was supposed to be the Kang Dynasty. And now it's Doomsday. Then everyone's like, oh, OK, it's Dr. Doom. You're doing Doom.
Right.
And then in addition, they were like, and also, if we're going to bring, you know, if we're going to do Dr. Doom, there's only one person on the planet who can play Dr. Doom. That's where I push back. That's not true. There's plenty of people who could have played Dr. Doom.
But, you know, they're selling it. They're selling it.
They are, without a doubt. And so I wrote a piece for Cinema Blend. It hasn't gone live yet, but it's like, ooh, you introduce Downey. Yeah. You introduce Downey. He's playing Dr. Doom. It just raises so many questions. Mm-hmm. It's like
so many questions, though, which is like, you know, maybe this is blind faith. So many questions that you go, well, they have to have it. They have to have figured something good out. Right.
Correct. Yes, that's what it is. If they're going to take this big swing, I don't think that the Russos and Marvel specifically would allow them to take this big swing unless they had good answers to questions like, is it a Tony Stark? Is this a Tony Stark variant? How are you going to address the fact that all of a sudden he looks like a character that was pivotal to the MCU? Like, people automatically are like, well, how is Spider-Man going to react to this when he sees that Dr. Doom looks like Tony Stark? What about Happy Hogan, who is a huge part of Deadpool? You know?
Yeah.
If they convince Gwyneth Paltrow to come back and she understands what's going on, is Pepper Potts going to react to this Tony Stark looking guy who's trying to tear the multiverse apart? There's just the thing that disappoints me a little bit about it is if they were casting somebody else and they legitimately could have a fresh start, Dr. Doom has such a rich backstory that you don't need these questions to answer. Mm-hmm. Like, you should introduce him as a new character who's potentially tied to the Fantastic Four, which that team, as we learned due to the footage that they showed, is going to exist in a completely different universe
for now. Right.
Like, for now. Yeah. They'll eventually come over to the MCU. But just have Victor Von Doom be part of that universe and cast Cillian Murphy, from the other Oppenheimer guy, and put him in, cause he would be amazing as Dr. Doom. But like you guys, I have faith in the fact that they have to know what's going on behind the scenes.
I pissed off a lot of people online because I alluded to the, I said I think it could be intriguing the first time Peter Parker sees this guy and who, you know, the person who was kind of his sort of adopted father all of a sudden is back to life. You know, I just imagine that, like, you know, a great place to cut Doomsday would be Peter Parker seeing him for the first time and going, Mr. Stark, and then cut to black. Like, that'd be great, you know. But then everyone is like, whoa, Dr. Doom wears a mask. Dr. Doom. And I get it. Yes, I get it. I get Dr. Doom wears a mask. And
but you don't cast Robert Downey Jr.
That's what I just said. I understand what you're telling me, but do you think that they're going to pay Robert Downey Jr. $100 million and cover his face the entire time?
Like, they're going to Mandalorian him. He's going to be like, I just do the VO. Somebody else does all
respectfully, you might not be getting the visualization of Dr. Doom that you want. Unless he's like, unless he's Stark all of Doomsday, and then it ends with him putting on the mask.
It's going to be as much as you did for Iron Man. Every time Iron Man lands, he takes his helmet off.
But
you
isn't know, the like, whole thing with Doom, though, that the mask is literally like burned to his face or something? I think the whole idea is that he can't take the mask off.
It's fused, theoretically, to his face.
So that's, you know, but so I think people need to start preparing themselves for the fact that they might not be getting the comic accurate Doom they want.
There's gonna be some nanotech
but that's
mask,
but that's not even like a Downey thing. That's just that's been movie adaptations forever. People are like, they, and it's like he took his mask off too much, and it's like, yeah, but he's an like it's an actor with the face. Like it's just a movie thing of like, we gotta put the actor's face on.
That was always the urban legend as to why Cruise didn't want the role of Tony Stark, because they were going to cover his face too much.
Can't cover that face.
I mean, come on.
That's the money.
So get someone uglier like Robert Downey Jr.
But this is what bothered me the most. This goes all the way back to Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3, in that at the final confrontation, this was old man shouting at a cloud, but this was my problem with it. But the final fight of that movie is Tobey Maguire versus Topher Grace. Like, Tobey's mask comes off immediately. Yeah. Venom peels his face back. Topher has those things that are like adhered to his face. And I was like, I don't want to watch Tobey Maguire fight Topher Grace. I want to see Spider-Man fight Venom, for God's sakes. Can you show it? So, all right. So Fantastic Four footage was shown in the hall. It was a reel that they cut together. That was a lot of like promotional material. I don't think it's anything from the film.
I think I read that.
Because they just started filming this week.
They just started filming, but they put enough of this stuff together. Like, it's them in character.
I saw it.
Yeah. It's Reed, you know, pretending he's a scientist who's teaching these kids stuff. We see Ben on a dating show kind of thing, like an old dating game type thing. Yeah. We see Johnny and Sue, and it's them sort of taking off. Although, you know, the movie's not going to go through their full origin story with them getting hit by the cosmic rays.
Questions for you, Sean. Sure. Fantastic. And you're a big Fantastic Four fan, from what I understand.
Them. Yes, love them.
Two things. One, you asked Matt Shakman if Downey was going to show up as Doom.
Yeah.
And he gave, not a telling answer, but he gave, you know, he was like, I can't say. Like, which is like a bit of a like, well, I feel like you could if it wasn't
you
true.
You just did. Yeah.
They had a bit of that. But it's the right thing to say either way. Because obviously we keep guessing. So I wanted to get your thoughts on if you think that he would, but also how long into this movie or maybe not at all in this movie do they get thrown into not that universe, but in one we recognize?
I think it would be towards the very end. So Galactus is the villain of this one, and he essentially devours planets, and the Silver Surfer is going to be in it as well, too. Played by Anya Taylor-Joy, is that correct?
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I'll check.
Yeah, double check who's playing her. So I could see, I can envision a story where the Fantastic Four take on Galactus and lose, in a Infinity War type way, and their planet gets devoured, and like the only way that they get off is by escaping, you know, and they end up in Earth 616, and similar to how Steve Rogers wakes up at the end of the first Avenger, and he's in present day. You know, they could lose. They lose their entire world, and they end up in 616.
And that way, you don't waste Galactus on one movie.
Yeah, right.
Would it be like they get eaten by Galactus, kind of thing, and it's like a wormhole type?
Or like they escape from their planet right before Galactus devours their world, kind of thing. And then they show up and they're like, there's a bigger threat going on here. Julia Garner. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm sorry. It's not Anya Taylor-Joy.
Which Ralph Innocent is Galactus. Sounds fucking awesome.
Yes.
So but that's intriguing to me because like we lost Kang, right? Well, Jonathan Majors is not playing Kang anymore. Kang is still a character, and Kang is someone that they could bring back later if they needed another big bad villain. Right. But you have Galactus. Now you're bringing in Doctor Doom. If they do Secret Wars and they do it in a traditional way, there's a villain called the Beyonder who could actually be brought back into it as well, too. There are other threats. They're Thanos level threats. They're even more. They're stronger than Thanos. And if they keep Downey around, if they can afford to keep Downey around, Doom should be a threat for, you know, years to come kind of thing. Like he shouldn't be two and done with these Avengers movies. So we'll find out how that happens. I actually had a theory that if Doom sticks around for a while, that when they do the Young Avengers team and they put together people like Kate Bishop and Kamala Khan, that Morgan Stark, maybe they age her up as a teenager and she leads the Young Avengers in a battle against Doom where she has to fight somebody who looks like her father kind of thing. So there's some emotional stakes to that. I don't know. You're talking 8, 10 years down the road for the way that these movies get made. So I don't know. I think Fantastic Four looked great. Yes, I do think that Dr. Doom will show up. I think Downey will make his debut.
It's going to kind of be like a Thanos putting on the glove type thing.
Similar. Yeah, I think so. And then they'll tease that out. I think at D23, which is taking place on August 9th, we're going to hear a lot more about Marvel sort of filling in the other gaps.
Hell yeah, it's coming right up.
Because I want to know some other movies that are coming. We didn't hear anything about Blade, which is still on the calendar.
Do you think D23, they released that footage publicly, the Fantastic Four? Do you think that's just they're going to let that be a special thing?
I think that's just a special in the hall type thing.
Cool. I think it's cool that they still do that.
There's a couple of things we thought we were going to see, but we didn't get a chance to see anything from Daredevil Born Again.
That's the big one.
TV show that's coming. Didn't hear anything more about that. I think we're going to hear something about Shang-Chi 2, Doctor Strange 3, Spider-Man 4. Sequels, baby. Here they come. Get ready.
It's fair.
And the footage that they showed for Captain America Brave New World looks fucking great. That movie looks great. It looks like a throwback to Winter Soldier.
Looked incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I'm all in on that.
And we get another nerdy Harrison Ford press tour. Love it.
I'm so ready for this. I've just got devoured everyone's interviews from that press line, whether it's you guys, Hannah, shout out to Hannah, who did a great job, got great stuff, Josh Horowitz, Ash, everyone who got Harrison Ford.
Pure gold.
It's fantastic. In my timeline, it brought up Blade Runner footage.
Yeah.
And I might have been someone with Fandango asked, like, what's the ultimate plan? And he goes, to become rich and famous. Just breaks Ryan Gosling like he's done for the rest of it.
If people haven't seen our Instagram reel, please go to Cinema Blend's Instagram and watch the reel of Hannah asking Harrison Ford if he's glad that Red Hulk is in the trailer now so he doesn't have to keep it secret anymore. Because he goes, I didn't lose a lot of sleep over it. It's like the perfect Ford answer ever. So great. All right. Go see Trap. Let us know your thoughts on the MCU. How you feel about it. Superman just wrapped. So DC is also climbing back up into the ranks. Ooh. And head to the comments down below. What are you doing?
Superman.
Head
to the comments down below to tell us. You gotta tune into YouTube to watch Jake's act outs.
Yes. You can hear the songs anywhere you go. We want to know, as your call to action this week, head to the comments down below after you've given us a like and a subscribe and you shared the show with a friend. What is the best performance in an M. Night Shyamalan flick? That's harder than you would think. Harder than also just what's your favorite.
Can
M.
we
Night?
Answer?
Sure.
Okay, you guys go first.
Is Hartnett's, I haven't seen Trap yet, is Hartnett's performance up there for you? Is it good enough? You guys were both praising it, or is it still?
It's up there, but like there,
but he's just got some bangers.
Great performances in Shyamalan films. I honestly think it's McAvoy. I think it's McAvoy.
I keep going back to McAvoy.
I think it's McAvoy and Split.
I do love Toni Collette in Sixth Sense.
I was gonna say Haley Joel.
That the car scene between that two of them, where he says like Grandma just keeps saying every day. And he's like, what is it that you ask her when you talk to her? And she says, do I make you proud?
Do I make you proud? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, like that moment.
The whole scene is incredible.
I just got chills thinking about it. And he's like, oh, yeah, there's an accident up there and a woman died. And she's like, yeah. Why? Like, how can you see her? And she's like, yeah. She's like, where is she? He goes, standing outside my window. And then there's the cut and it's the woman on the bike standing right. Oh, my God. That's such a good movie.
Turns 25
in a couple of days.
Simple tricks like that, you know. Yeah. It's not flashy,
yeah,
but it's just, if we're talking performances as well too, I mean Bruce and Sam Jackson in Unbreakable are come on,
yeah. 25 years ago, Sixth Sense made $700 million worldwide. I mean, I could get online and do the inflation calculator, but what do you think that equates to today?
1.7.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's definitely that's a $1 billion movie, basically. I mean, it's almost a $1 billion movie 25 years ago.
No, dude, that movie was a phenomena. I mean, it was everywhere.
And five, six Oscar nominations. It got a Best Picture nomination.
not for me.
I do agree with you, Sean, that I think that Bruce should have gotten a Best Actor nomination. I think Absolutely. People slept on his performance. I will Ridiculous. Agree with you on that.
Because everyone else got nominated.
Yeah.
Toni Collette got nominated. Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah.
Shyamalan for
director,
picture and screenplay. Yeah.
I'm seeing.
Bruce doesn't. Come on.
I think this is only domestic, though.
Come on.
Worldwide, I think it did seven. Like it closed to maybe like 6-7 or something
okay,
like that.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. I would say definitely because I'm seeing domestic. Lifetime gross is almost 293, and adjusted that's 539.
Okay, so yeah, so a half a bill domestic.
That's pretty crazy.
That's a lot of dollars and cents.
Oh my god. Gabe, wrap us, please. Get us out of here. Jesus.
Hope everyone stuck around all the way to the end of the show for that one.
Oh my god.
Spielberg, I promise it'll be worth it.
Come on. Oh yeah, we're never getting Scorsese.
Talk to you guys next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.